Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Welcome to this BFI at Home discussion for a new documentary for BBC One. Subnormal, a British Scandal explores how black children in the 1960s and 70s were disproportionately sent to schools for the so-called educationally subnormal. This one-hour documentary features first-hand interviews with key participants in the events, many who have never spoken before. They're telling their stories for the first time. It's directed by emerging talent Litania Shannon, and it's poignant, powerful, and sometimes I found the stories, but I must say, quite painful. The idea originated from Steve McQueen while he was working on the Small Axe anthology drama Education, examining one of the biggest scandals in the British education system. Subnormal, a British Scandal, tells the story of how black parents, teachers and activists join forces to expose injustice and force the education system to change. It explores the controversial debates around race and intelligence that led to the scandal and the devastating impact on the children that were affected. Now, Steve McQueen, the executive producer, says looking at the past is an indication of what we have achieved today. These documentaries show us how far we still have to travel for liberty and justice. Well, we'll start with the executive producer, Steve McQueen. We're joined. Executive producer, James Rogan. Director Litania Shannon and senior producer Helen Bart. Steve, I would like to start with you. I mentioned at the beginning that this originated from your work on Small Axe film Education, where we told the story of 12-year-old Kingsley and the devastating impact that being sent to a special school had on him. Why did you then feel there was more to tell and to be told in a documentary form?
Well, to be honest with you, I just wanted to sort of make it very clear and plain through this documentary. I mean, you know, we had an amazing talent who, as a film director, that we wanted to sort of find. But also, it's about passing on the baton. And for me, personally, it was to do with illuminating the things what happened behind the film. You know, the Black Parents Black Parents Association movement, for example. And things like that. It was just one of those things where we needed to find out what was going on. And I'm sort of mumbling and stuttering now just because it was very painful for me, because to bring this story up, even in education, when we did the film, that was the last thing that I had. Because in some way, there was a bit of a shame in me, a deep shame in what happened to me at school. And I know that my future would have been what it isn't today. My presence wouldn't be what it is today if it hadn't been for the Black Parents Association and what they did to change the law to sort of demolish education subnormal schools, because that would have been my path. And Kingsley, the character in Education, would have been me. So, you know, these black people made my liberty. So I needed to find out exactly what was going on at that time and sort of show to the world what was happening. So it's one of those things that even affect me today. And it's just one of those things which is just painful, but needs to be sort of dredged up and shown to all, and to see how far we've come. It's just one of those things we needed. It was a must, a want and a need, as far as I was concerned.
I know while you were doing your year three project, you talked a lot about the importance of education, the school environment, in terms of being the formative years of a child and the impact that can have on them when it's positive or negative or otherwise. Do you think in a way this documentary throws up when it goes desperately wrong?
Absolutely. And, you know, people's lives, let's be frank, were ruined because of this system, devastated because of this system. They didn't fulfill their true potential. And I could have been one of those candidates, who didn't, you know, had an opportunity, opportunity of possibility. All you need is possibility. You know, people are quick to judge anyone, but they have no idea where that person will go. And I was sort of thrown to the scrapyard. And it would have been worse had I have not been, had these black parents and educated, not changed the law. So it's very important that this document was made, really, because it just shows how powerful we are as individuals, but when we come together and what we can change and what we can shape. And I am testament to that, sitting here talking to you today. Absolutely.
All righty. Context of white supremacy. I think in our decade, 12 plus years of broadcasting, this is the first time that I had something as mundane as a spill. I had my beverage. It was sitting right next to me. Just moved my arm and massive spill as I went to broadcast. Thankfully, did not get anywhere close to the electronics. Have my code about that, so that was good. But just, wow, massive spill. Right as we got ready to broadcast, I think I'm good for the most part. Maybe a slight bit more cleanup, but at least I'm in a dry spot, ready to roll. The ugliness of 2021 continues in a myriad of ways, spilled beverage and all. Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, May 16, 2021. So I have been told. Our global Sunday talk on racism. Again, we do this broadcast once a month, third Sunday of every month, to discuss racism, white supremacy, global impact, how it operates as a system around the world, trying to compare and contrast the differences in that system, particularly the last 15 months or so since COVID-19, since that certainly has been global as well, to just kind of hear the sometimes radical differences in how people are responding to all of this in different parts of the world. Particularly, I've been saying for a few days now, with the Centers for Disease Control announcement that just this past Thursday, that hey, if you're fully vaccinated, no need to distance, wear a mask, any of that, you can pretty much kind of go about business as usual before all of this started. And just the reverberations of that, both across the U.S. and then around the world, it seems like, not everywhere, certainly not in India, Brazil, other parts of the world. I think even some of the countries in Southeast Asia, they've had reports of increases in cases. So not everywhere, but it does seem like in a number of different areas, hey, we are rearing the roll. Is getting close to summertime, so people are making plans for family reunions and summer vacation travels and all the rest of it, kind of, you know, waiting for business to reopen. So I was very eager to kind of check in with some of our folks in different parts of the world to hear about that. And then as well, the piece that we opened with, the BBC, they have a new documentary film, Subnormal. We heard a brief segment from the interview with BFI, and they spoke with the executive producer, Steve McQueen, black male. He's done a lot of major film projects before, talked a lot about racism before, and talked about, you know, what motivated him to want to do this film, Subnormal, discussing the institutional systematic abuse of black children in Britain for decades, and even how this is, you know, continuing in different forms. And he, you know, got a little choked up talking about how he personally was impacted. And then other people, really interesting film. Just check in to see if any of our folks in the UK area are familiar with that project as well. We'll give opportunity for some of the folks who are listening in stateside or wherever else to call in, ask a question as well. Let's see, at the beginning, I believe for now, we have Andrew with us, and then I'll see if I can dial in and or for other of our folks call in. But I believe we do have Andrew with us, who is in the UK. Andrew, are you with us, sir?
Sorry, Gus. Yes, Andrew here. How you doing? You okay?
Whew, I survived the great beverage spill of 2021. Thus far, I will give my hands a good washing and towel up. I'll be ready to roll. Might have to change my trousers, but I survived. Yeah, before I guess we get to the COVID-19 situation, did you heard about this BBC documentary, Subnormal?
No, you've just educated me. I had no idea about it. As I was listening to the bits you just played, I just Googled it, and I'm looking at it now. what I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at it now. It looks like it's it says here, the untold story of the one of the biggest scandals in the history of British education. It says Thursday, the 20th of May, on the BBC One and iPlayer. So I mean, that's what it's got here. Underneath it is, yeah. So it looks like it's not aired yet. It looks like, unless I'm incorrect, it looks like it's going to be aired on, if I've got this right, Thursday the 20th of May. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a trailer, literally just looked at a trailer of it as you were talking. I couldn't find it on the iPlayer. There's another date here that says the 13th of May, but I'm going to make an assumption it's airing on on Thursday the 20th. I know where, because you may be aware that this has come from a book by a chap called Bernard Cord, and he wrote a book called How the British School System, I'm probably going to get the title incorrect, but how the British school system rendered black children educationally subnormal. The book came out around about 68 or 69. You could still buy a copy of it as well. There's a new version of it. In fact, I think I've ordered a copy of it. I think I ordered a copy of it a couple of weeks ago. The original, I think, was out of print, and I think that, you know, yeah, I think it's just come. You know, they've got an updated version of it. So it's quite a famous book here. He went into the Grenadian government, if my memory serves me correct, around, because, you know, we looked at this a little while ago, and he went into running the country. The American government decided to go and tear down Grenada, and that's what, you know, that's the history. That's what the American government did with Grenada. So they went and basically, you know, went in, destroyed the country. That's what the American government did. So they didn't like what Bernard Coward and his government were doing. This is the chap that wrote this book, of which, you know, where the name for this documentary comes from, and so that's some of the history. I'm hoping somebody can come on and fill in my gaps, because I haven't studied this for quite a while. But that's the chap that wrote this book. Brilliant, brilliant book. Brilliant guy that wrote it. Absolutely true. And in fact, you know, it's an understatement that, you know, all of it is an understatement in this country, if I'm really honest with you.
Hey, you are way more informed than myself, probably anybody else. And you, aren't you an educator?
Yeah, by trade, yeah, teacher. Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Way more informed, and you live right, you know, in the area where they're talking about this, so I suspect you'll be our resident expert. Even among the people that participate from the UK, I don't think any of them are educators, unless I'm misinformed. So, reigning expert on this subject matter, sir. We should get the book, both that you said this is based on, and I think you are correct. The documentary is not slated to be released until the 21st, I believe you said, which I think is like Thursday, sometime this week coming up. Or might even be Wednesday, sometime coming up pretty soon. But the interview that I just talked about, that was for, and even that's recent. That was from yesterday. That was from this past Thursday, the 13th, with BFI on YouTube. Folks can check it out. It has the director and Steve McQueen. We heard a little bit from him. But they have an interview within this, like an hour interview. It's a little clip from the film. And they have an interview with one of the black male student. And he's talking about this experience of being classified as subnormal. And he goes back to his mother, because I guess this happened to him when he was like 6 years old or something. So he says, you know, my memory, I'm six, I don't know. So he goes to talk to his mom, and he says, do you remember, you know, what they said to you? And she's like, oh yeah, we got this great opportunity for your son. It's going to be awesome. Got these resources, and you'll get all the help that he needs. And she's like, oh, that's, you know, great. Who doesn't want that for their child, right? Like, oh yeah. So he says, What type of education did you think I was going to be getting? And she said, oh, I thought you were getting a great education. I thought, you know, you were going to be prepared to be, you know, whatever you want to do in life and successful and all of that. Like, she had no idea, like, subnormal. Like, what? Like, you mean you're saying that he's like kind of on the he's not that intelligent, so we want to kind of put him to the back and not tax him too much, and well, we won't teach him too much because he's not, hurt his little Negro brain. Like, what? She had no idea at all, and this went on for decades. I guess, again, for Andrew, is this something that, I guess, is this common knowledge, or is this something that people only recently started talking about?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, you see, not a lot of African Caribbean people are that conscious, to use that word, conscious. A book like this really is quite obviously quite well known in what we call in the UK the conscious community. Outside of that, I don't think so. It's a must read book. He was a school teacher, to my knowledge. He was a school teacher in the UK for a part, and the book itself was written here in the UK, if my memory of studying this is correct. So he was a teacher here. Then he left and joined the government in, as I said, in Grenada. Joined Maurice Bishop's government. So Bernard Cole, to my knowledge, was a deputy prime minister, if I've got that right. I want somebody to come in and correct me, but he's a deputy prime minister, Grenada, with Maurice Bishop, and they're pushing forward with their governmental agenda, and then it were the Americans, as far as I understand, the American government under, I think it was Ronald Reagan, who decided to go and screw things up. He wanted to link up with Cuba, if my memory serves me correct. And the Americans were not having it. The book itself is called How the West Indian Child is Made Educationally Subnormal in the British School System. The scandal of the black child in Britain. So that's really what. So that's the book. Great book. It was published. I'm Googling it now, the rest of it, by New Beacon Books, in 71, 1971. Obviously written slightly before that. I mean, as I understand it, it may have been the first critique of our experience in this country, in the so-called education system. I mean, really, and that went on. It goes on now, to be quite frank. Everything highlighted in that book literally, pretty much goes on now. Same game, different name. As the last poet said, same game, different name. The devil, the meat, it's a mean machine, and and that's what we're living in. That's what we're living under, and that's how it was then. I was born in 68, and that's what we're living under now. It's the same thing, pretty much. And I say that as a teacher, to be quite honest.
First-hand perspective, they call it. Just for, I guess, folks, at least in the US, although I would suspect Canada and many other places around the world can also relate. Ooh-wee. Like, all of the remedial education programs, sometimes they'll give it different cute names, special education, and all of that, where somehow lots and lots of black children end up special, remedial, subnormal. Lots. And in fact, let's see how much of a parallel there is. At least in the US, there is a strong component of black misandry where it's not just black children, it is a high level of black male children that end up with this classification. Is that the case there, or is it pretty balanced where they just terrorize all the black children equally, black males and black females?
But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Black boys are seen as a threat. Pretty much as soon as we start, I say we, because I used to be a black boy. Pretty much as soon as we start walking, we're seen pretty much as a threat, and that's pretty much it. Get the lowest exam grades. Right from day dot. Really, in terms of jobs, in terms of education, get treated more harshly in terms of education. If you've got an African surname, get treated more harshly in that respect as well. Right across the board, really. I mean, as far as, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we have to, in terms of an antidote to it, in terms of a solution, you know, we have to protect our own children as much as we can, have supplementary schools as much, which there are quite a few in the London area. And anyway, supplement our children's education, not just academic education, but in terms of what your program is all about, Gus, the whole thing about teaching our children as early as possible. In terms of how to basically deal with racism, white supremacy, and bring it to an end or replace it. You know, we have to really be educating our children about that. Not all of us understand that particular point.
That, unfortunately, that is the case worldwide. If anything, if folks make time to watch the documentary, I'm going to check it out myself. Another great reminder. There are many things to discuss before conceiving a child. What your offspring's academic plan is going to look like for at least, you know, the first 5-10 years of it. Like, that should be discussed before the bedroom, in my opinion. If that conversation, like, in like a comprehensive way, like this is something that we talk about for hours and hours before the child is even here. If it's not happening in that manner, hey, racists have got really old, dusty, moldy plans about how to attack black children all over the world. May 21, if you need another reminder. What is it? iPlayer, scan or subnormal. A British scandal. I knew that word was in there. Subnormal. A British scandal directed by LaTanya Shannon. Lovely black female executive produced by Steve McQueen. Black male. Not switching gears totally, but staying in the same area of people, activity, education. Just with the last almost year and a half, basically. You both are an educator and you're an attempted parent, father. What impact have you seen on children over the past year with the whole COVID situation?
Probably similar to the States, really. Obviously, you know, schools have been shut. In fact, universities have been shut as well. So, but in terms of, you know, the 11 to 18s, it's all been about, you know, parents, children staying at home, parents trying to get their children up, trying to get their children to some sort of computer, trying to get their children to focus from home, trying to get their children to actually work in a, you know, constructive manner. And for, you know, for some parents, well, to be honest, most of the parents I've spoken to, that's been tough. That's been difficult. You know, quite interesting for a couple of reasons. Obviously, you know, parents get a little taste of what it is to try and educate children, you know, what it is to try and educate children, not just children, but their child. You know, it's always interesting when you talk to parents and they consider their children to be, you know, behave like little angels. And if we're honest as adults, when we were kids, you know, we acted one way at school and possibly acted a slightly different way at home. If we're honest, not all of us, but a lot of us, especially boys, right? So it's been interesting talking to parents who have had, after a couple of weeks, have had, you know, I've seen the real face of their children, you know, how their children are between 8:30 a.m. in the morning and 4:30, you know, in the afternoon. You know, that time period, normally only teachers get to see what their children are really like. So, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 months of that, you know, parents, as many parents that I know were happy to have their children go back to school. So that's on the one side of it. On the other side, on a more, probably a more serious note, you know, some children have had issues with their mental health. Some children have had issues around just coming back to school and getting back into the swing of that. Both, you know, for some that's been, well, to be honest, I think for all kids, that's been quite tricky moving back from home to basically get into the swing of studying again, and just the routines of that as well, you know. So all of that's been quite, you know, quite hard. Probably like the States, the exam boards in the UK have foregoed the exams, right? So they've relied on things like teacher assessment and us sending off grades to them to the exam boards, and you know, but you know, for the last couple of years, this year included, last year and this year, there's no exams, you know, and maybe they're going to have to think about that for next year as well, you know. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of how it's been.
Wow, that is crazy! Yikes, they're contemplating perhaps no exams for next year either. Wow. And I noted that as an educator, Andrew, a little sly enjoyment at some of the parents having to struggle with educating their own children and being gleeful to send their little angels back to you all to educate them, not wanting to endure any more of that. But I know in the States, it's been reported that they have called it the other COVID-19, that a number of children and even larger people have gained a lot of weight, and that is adding to the mental stress of all of this, trying to go back to school and being, I was trying to tell folks, like, imagine being a young person, like 13, 17, whatever it is, high school, even younger, and you've gained 20 pounds while you've been away from school for a year. And now you got to go back and see your friends in person for the first time, plus 20 pounds. Like, has that been an issue, weight gain for children over there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't say for sure that I've not done any research around that myself. But what I can definitely say is that there's been a lot of unhealthy habits that kids have picked up. You know, one of them is, you know, because, you know, to be, well, one of them, I'm going to make an assumption, is going to be weight gain or weight loss. You know, that's the other side of it, because for some children here, right, school may be the only place they get, they get a proper meal during the daytime. You know, I know, as sad as it sounds, some kids, you know, whoever they live with, whoever is tasked to look after them, may or may not be cooking daily, on a daily basis. So school might be a place for some kids where they're going to get, you know, a meal at 12 o'clock. Some kids eat breakfast at school, so they might get breakfast, lunch, you know, as well, and may not get anything constructive when they go home to eat. So weight gain, weight loss, you know, unhealthy eating as well, you know, I mean, you know, not in it, eating constructive food at home, you know, that's the other side of it. Also, if they're, you know, a lot of kids, you know, they're not meant to be, you know, last summer they weren't meant to be out, you know, but trust me, a lot of kids were running around the streets, getting into trouble. You know, at the end of the day, they were just all over the, you know, and so, you know, sitting on Xbox, PlayStation, 20, you know, for a lot of kids, PlayStation was the, I know one of my mentees was mentored by PlayStation, you know, basically just sat on PlayStation literally all day long. Right. So, you know, there's a lot, some kids that have anxiety issues didn't want to go out, you know, so, you know, really, for a lot of kids, it wasn't a great time. For other kids, gallivanting around the street. And so, you know, you can imagine, right. So it's a, you know, a very, coming back to school and talking to parents and kids, and even over that time talking to parents, it wasn't a great time.
Context of white supremacy, heard that frequently all over the world. PS5 has been the most active tutor over the last 15 months or so. The screen time and telephone time, I guess, and as he said, just bad habits, unhealthy habits, weight loss, weight gain. I know that's the case certainly here in the U.S. where school, unfortunately, a lot of times might be one of the few reliable sources for meals for children, particularly for non-white children and number of white children, suspected racists as well, that they will point out. But It's been, man, super challenging, disruptive 15 months or so. We'll kind of see how things unfold moving forward. Before I ask directly about, I guess, shifts for the summer, I'll give out the number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We'll get questions from our folks stateside. And then if we have any other folks, if you are in any other parts of the world, *61, we'll get your hand on, get your thoughts on these issues and the myriad of other things that are happening in the known universe, all related to white supremacy, racism. Here in the States, the Centers for Disease Control, they announced on Thursday that if you are fully vaccinated, oh man, are you fully vaccinated now? I know you got shot number one. Are you fully vaccinated now?
I am fully vaccinated as of Friday, just gone.
Wow, look at that. Look at that. So for people like Andrew, the Centers for Disease Control said, hey, toss that mask in the rubbish bin. Forget all that social distancing. If you want to go out and high five everybody and kiss everyone on the block, two thumbs up, you are good to go, which has radically shifted rules almost immediately in some instances where that changed regulations about masks and social distancing and seems to cause, you guessed it, a lot more confusion. I'm trying to see if there have been reverberations around the world. Has that impacted how people are operating in other parts of the world, or at least from your observation in the UK, did that have any sort of impact on how people are talking about regulations moving forward?
What in terms of vaccination spread, people becoming vaccinated?
The U.S. announcement from the Centers for Disease Control that if you're fully vaccinated, you can move right ahead. You don't need a mask and you don't need a distance.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I've not heard anybody talk about their announcement. The announcement that this government's, you know, Boris Johnson's government's doing is you still need to social distance. You still got this is even if you've got a vaccine, even if you've been doubly vaccinated or singly vaccinated, you've still got to wear a mask. You've still got a social distance. All of that stuff still applies. As of a particular date this month. I think tomorrow there's going to be changes in bars, I think, and in nightclubs and restaurants. They're all going to open. But in terms of going into shops, as I understand it, you still got to wear a mask. You still got a social distance, whether or not you've had vaccinations or not. So that's this government's guidelines. You know, you still got to wear a mask, you still got to socially distance, which makes sense because you're still a carrier. You know, to some degree you're still a carrier. You're not necessarily going to die from it, but you can still carry it and give it to you and give it to people that you can give it to people that may have a reason, whatever that is, for not taking it. You know, that may have there's a lot of people that have got their philosophies around not taking a vaccine. And so they're really they're still at, those people are still at risk, you know. So this is about some people have like to call herd immunity. You know, it's this whole thing about taking the vaccine. The majority of people have, you know, I mean, in this country, what's the percentage? I think it's something like about 50% of the people in the UK have had the first jab, I think, and I think about 30% now have had the second jab. It's something like that. It might even be higher now. So there you go.
Wow. Andrew being in that second number, fully vaccinated. Now that is interesting. I was telling folks I was curious to see, like, you know, what sort of impact that will have around the globe. The U.S. making that announcement, like, hey, fully vaccinated, you're good to go. Apparently, at least in the U.K., Andrew's observations, no impact. No one's talking about that at all. It's still, if you're vaccinated, put that mask on, distancing, all the rest of it still applies. And he said that makes sense, which I think for some people here, they said would seem like it would make sense, because how can you really tell? There's so many people, at least here in the States, there's such a significant crowd, such a sizable crowd of people who have said from day one that the Rona is a fake and they're not getting a vaccine, they're not wearing a mask, all of that. So how would you distinguish between a person who's vaccinated and a person who just says, you know, all this is a fake, and you know, I wasn't with this from day one? Like, vaccine passports, that is one thing that they have been talking about consistently. Vaccine passports to prove that, you know, you've been vaccinated. And the myriad of problems that we even had the report yesterday talking about the market for fake vaccine certificates and all the rest. So, lots to consider moving forward, I reckon. Are there plan? Are they talking about, you know, things perhaps reopening in the summer? I believe it was this weekend. Didn't they have like 20,000 people at Wembley Stadium for a soccer game? Didn't that happen?
So the FA Cup final, was it between Chelsea and Leicester? You had 20,000 people there. There's plans to basically open things up really, really slowly. So, but you know, there was also quite a well-known award, music award ceremony called the Brit Awards. You know, you had a load of NHS. They gave tickets to NHS staff to attend that. So there is a, I think there is a date. I can't remember what it is, to be honest. I think it's sometime in June to open things up fully. But that now apparently depends on the data that comes regarding the spread of what white people call the Indian variant. You know, we always find it funny that there's no English variant. There's a Kent variant, but there's no English variant. Do you get what I mean? Right. So there's this little place in England that where that I live in, actually, where the variant comes from. But what the government's saying is that it's not all over the cup, but you know, it's really the English variant. Every country is known by a variant by their name of the country, except for the UK. Right, so we have to start calling the Kent variant the English variant. I want to make that one crystal clear. That's racism right there. Do you understand? So no, it's the English variant. But I mean, there are plans to open things up fully. But as Boris says, Mr. Johnson says, you know, that's dependent on the statistics that come back regarding the spread of what white people call the Indian variant.
The words are important. They use that frequently in the US press outlets and many others, the Indian variant. But yeah, I have not heard the English variant. I'm not even sure I've heard the Kent variant. I think that was my first time even hearing that term. But oh, words are important.
Gust, as far as I understand it, the English variant was the, I mean, that one was exported all over the place. You know, that was one of the biggest variants. You know, that right there, the English variant, that was one of the biggest variants on planet Earth, as far as I know. You know, so I mean, you know, so that's a, but you see, well, as I said, that's use of words, that's racism right there.
Agreed, and I believe you're correct. That's my recollection also, that when from like the very beginning of this last year, them saying that it was white, well, they didn't say white people, but individuals classified as white who reside in England and different parts of Europe who were traveling and all the rest of it, they were the ones who were spreading all of this and going hither and yonder and all of these places and what have you. But I don't, at any point, I don't remember any use of English variant. English variant that is causing all of these problems, even in the midst of, you know, it comes from China and all of that. No English variant. Now, Indian variant. I'm waiting. Probably there will be a Brazilian variant because, you know, they've talked about that. They've even hinted that that would be a problem because they, you know, aren't taking it seriously. Feel like they're not doing a good job in responding to all of this. So, words.
I've just been told that 80% of the English variant, right, is in India, right? So people, so the variant from here, right, was transported over there, right? And obviously that's where their variant as I mean, I'm not a microbiologist, so I know enough. I'm not a virologist, so I don't know how it works. But obviously their variant came out of what came out of here first, from the UK. I would suppose.
No surprise at all. And then the English variant, and then they just switch it up. Oh yes, that's the Indian variant. Yes. Words, we discuss that all the time. Have to be very mindful about that. And that is the number one weapon system of racism, white supremacy. Remember, we got the Asian flu and all of this to come up with all these weird names. I'm double checking as well if folks have any questions, or if we have folks that are different parts of the world, if you want to engage in certainly what's happening with the COVID-19 situation or other topics related to white supremacy, racism. I also wanted to make sure I brought up, we have been talking, I know on the compensatory call-in and some of our other programs, there have been many, many reports about fertility rates. This is another one with words, and we discussed this yesterday. Just contrasting when they discuss COVID-19 vaccines, and frequently when they talk about black people in the States, they'll say, oh, you know, black people are hesitant, African Americans, you know, they Tuskegee and all the rest, they don't want to get the vaccine. They will not identify white people as being hesitant. The closest they'll get is they'll say Republican males don't want to get vaccine. They will not say white people do not want to be vaccinated. When they talk about fertility rates, they will not give a racial classification. They'll just say fertility rates in the U.S., fertility rates in Europe, and they'll go from there. It'll be no racial identifying at all. I think the closest that we've gotten was Judith Finlayson, where she said European males in North America, or in the United States, or North America, excuse me, she said North America and Europe, she said 60% of them will be infertile by 2060, where I was stunned. Now, we've been talking about all this. I checked the Financial Times just today. This was published just today, literally 7 hours ago. A midlife crisis takes shape in the U.S. Demographics is destiny. For decades, America has enjoyed the economic and geopolitical fruits in its high birth rate. Between 1990 and 2010, fertility levels in the U.S. were higher than the average for any developed country, with the exception of Israel, Iceland, and New Zealand. So what does it mean that the U.S. birth rate is on track to plunge below the recent trend rate of Europe? In 2007, just before the Great Recession, the U.S. total fertility rate, meaning the number of births that a woman is expected to have in her lifetime, was 2.12. By 2019, just before COVID-19 struck, it had fallen to 1.71. And then it gives the CDC estimates that it's now at roughly 1.64, record low. Is this talked about? Do you hear this being discussed in Europe, fertility rates, and what in words? What words are they using if you are hearing this discussed?
I've not heard any discussion recently about fertility rates. I mean, I hear it sporadically on one or two programs. It doesn't appear to be on the news or big topic of conversation. I mean, we discuss it. When I say we, I mean, various black groups, African groups in the UK, we discuss the fertility rates in the UK and Europe in general, white people, that discussion has happened amongst us, but not really on white media, not really on European media that I can see. Not at all. But it is obvious what's actually happening. You know, it is obvious what's happening. It's obvious when you go to particular sort of, well, inner city areas. It's obvious when you look at schools in London and other inner city, other suburban inner city areas in like Birmingham and places like that. You know, you've got, you haven't got a lot of white kids coming into certain areas, certain schools, that may be linked to white flight. White people moving out of particular areas for obvious reasons. It's not in the news. It's not in the news. Having said that, in the States, I've probably seen more of it coming out of the States in terms of Mexican Americans coming in and other people was coming from around the world into America. you know, in Florida, you know, places like that, or sorry, Miami and places like that that I've been to, you know, it surprised me how very few white people there are, you know, but I'm assuming there's more in other parts of the country. Maybe I'm not sure if that's the case, you know.
I guess you could venture to Washington State, Oregon, some of the other places. These are not the most populated parts of the U.S. However, these are some of the whiter parts of the U.S. But that notwithstanding, the reports are pretty widespread. And that's interesting because Andrew said that, you know, he's not really seeing too many or too much of this talk in like mainstream media. Over in his part of the world, the UK, whereas in the States, it seems like it's daily, regularly in mainstream outlets, New York Times, NPR, wherever, you know, you would go to get USA Today, whatever mainstream type media outlets that you would be checking, it's right there. And then they have books too. They just had the countdown two words that's talking about the drop in fertility rates. It's in Judith Finlayson's book, You Are What Your Grandparents Ate. She's in Canada. Not, you know, big deal. But it seems like it is widespread, talked about a lot, and on a pretty regular basis. In fact, we had the report. This was the week of the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. In the midst of all that, they stopped to bring on the author of Countdown to discuss fertility rates in the midst of all of that. I said, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, White Genetic Annihilation. And just to emphasize, like, I mean, as much time and energy and all the other topics that surrounded George Floyd and everything, we want to stop and talk about fertility rates. It has been really big news, at least in me. That's my conclusion, at least for the moment, at least right now. Lots of focus on this, and white people seem to be very, very, I guess, concerned, talking about it, probably plotting. They generally, if something is a problem, they don't just do the hand-wringing, they get to work. Let's see. We'll see if we can get that book on the book club, maybe. Reading More Important Than Watching Television. We've had several books mentioned today. You can read about the Subnormal Scandal. You can read about the fertility rates, read Dr. Welsing's book, The Isis Papers. Reading More Important Than Watching Television. That said, if other folks who are with us, wish we had some of our other global participants here. If you're hiding out, dialed in, feel free. The number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have a question, thought you want to share, or a question you want to get in for Andrew, something about what's happening UK side with racism, white supremacy, feel free. Make sure I remind folks we will be here on Tuesday. Sarah Jo Peterson et al. So some of her colleagues should also be with her. That'll be interesting. We can, you know, see if she brings white people, non-white people, maybe some of both. But she wrote a series of reports on how interstate highways were used to destroy areas where black people reside, deliberately so in many instances across the United States. She'll be here on Tuesday. You can check out her series. It's posted online this year. And talk about subjects that have been mentioned a lot, fertility rates, and then use of the interstate highway system in acts of white terrorism. That also has been talked about a lot recently in many, many different outlets. But that's Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we'll have Dr. Ruby Lathan. She'll be back with us. We've talked a lot, maybe not enough, but we talked a lot about health. Talked about that even to some degree today, gaining weight and sitting at home. What are you eating or what are you not eating if you're losing weight? Super important. She'll be with us again. Both we can talk about it from parents who are trying their best to work with their children, to make sure that they're eating well, to know that they can still eat well, have lots of energy on a plant-based diet, exercise, all of that for mental health. So that'll be Wednesday. Tuesday, Interstate Highway Racism, Sarah Jo Peterson. Wednesday, Dr. Ruby Lathan, Eating Well as Counter-Racism. That's it. Let's see.
Gus, can I ask the question?
Let's hear.
There's a couple of things. First of all, a lot of people have been asking me, where can I listen live to the cows? And I've been trying to find it myself. Obviously, I can find all the old broadcasts, but how do we go about listening live to the show? Is there a particular platform?
There are several options. Let's see. They can listen at Black Talk Radio Network. You can just go to the site, Black Talk Radio Network. You'll see the Cows tab. Yeah. You can listen right there. You can go to the Cows on TuneIn. I can just email you the link, or they can go to TuneIn, put in the, I think it's under COWS. It might be the acronym COWC.O.W.S. on tunein.com, and you can listen there. You can call in via the free Skype line, or Vope line, sorry, free Vope line. That's linked at Black Talk Radio Network. Let's see. That's at least three where you can listen live.
All right, lovely. Yeah, great. Thanks for that. I've got the I'm on the Black Talk Radio website now, so I'll pass that one on. Great stuff. Good. Thanks.
Absolutely.
And the other one was regarding health, actually. I heard you just said that that you had a show around that. Did they talk about prostate cancer amongst black men by any chance? Is that a thing it's a big thing amongst us in the UK at the moment. I was just wondering, because 1 in 4 black men in the UK will get prostate cancer. 1 in 4. It's 1 in 9 for white men. So I'm just wondering if it's a known thing, if that's a thing in the States.
I will make sure to bring it up when she comes to chat it up with us on Wednesday. Now, I know when she was with us, she's visited many, many times over the years, really only since I started practicing yoga, to be embarrassed about it. But I mean, hey, you still learning. You get the information when you get it. But she's been with us many times over the years, and I know she was with us in the middle of the horror of last year, or actually she was with us a few times. She was with us right after Chadwick Boseman passed away, and he had colon cancer, not prostate cancer, but he had colon cancer, passed away, I believe, at like 44, something, you know, disgracefully young. And she was talking about that, and she said that alerted so many folks. Like, wow, that is crazy. I need, you know, let me check. How can I take care of my colon, blah, 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 and all the rest of it? And she called it lifestyle cancer. And so we talked about a lot of that, because that was having such an impact on black males specifically. So she talked about that and things you can do with your diet, things you can eat. No alcohol. She emphasized that. She kept saying that repeatedly. No alcohol, no alcohol, no alcohol. Is huge for that. So I will make sure to bring it up with her on Wednesday to get her recommendations and what have you. But I would be like gobsmacked if that's something that she doesn't talk about and try and fight off with healthy diet and exercise, for sure.
Great. Brilliant. Thanks, Gus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Health. That's kind of, I keep saying that all the time, because she talked about that with Chadwick Boseman and saying, hey, if we're really serious about replacing white supremacy with justice, you are going to have to be healthy. You're going to have all kinds of energy and vitality, even if you're not going out and like physically doing something like putting, you know, hands on a white person per se, even if it's teaching black children, you will need health and vitality. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've even just tried to use your brain computer to think when you don't feel well, wow. We need to be super healthy, lots of vitality to replace white supremacy with justice. A whole lot of that comes down to what is on your plate.
Yep.
Wednesday, Dr. Lathan. Let's see. Person who dialed in 0747. 0747. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Greetings, Gus and Andrew. I had two questions. What's the status of mask wearing in the UK? You know, that's been such a big issue in the United States, particularly in the public. I mean, you know, anti-mask people, and I suspect it's going to be a continual problem, you know, that, for example, I may meet in the workplace, you know, if I continue to wear a mask or continue to wear a mask out when you have all sorts of suspected races running around without masks. So my first question was, what's your thinking about wearing a mask, and is it that much of a big issue either for or against in the UK?
Yeah, interesting. Up until the vaccine came along, I would say most people were wearing masks or at least paying lip service to wearing the mask. In other words, just wearing it around their mouth, but not over their nose. Yeah, there's a whole heap of people with the mask somewhere on their face or around their chin, but not necessarily wearing it over their nose and their mouth, you know, maybe because it's hard to breathe or whatever it is. You know, some people taking, when they want to talk to someone, they take the mask down to talk and then put it back when they're finished. Maybe not understanding that it's when they're talking that they need to wear the mask over their face, you know, touching the mask with their hands and then, you know, wiping their eyes and stuff like, you know, people are human. Do you know what I mean? In terms of mask take up, which is probably really maybe what you're asking, I would say, you know, up until the vaccination, you know, people started getting vaccinated, I'd say mask take up was pretty good. I mean, the bottom line is it was illegal to not wear a mask on public transport. Some people did, but if you got caught, I think you would get a fine. I drive to work, so I don't normally take public transport. So yeah, the take up in supermarkets and shops, you know, couldn't really go into a shop without a mask on. Right, so I think take up was quite good. Now that what I've noticed now, however, since, you know, loads of people are now vaccinated with one or two shots, I've noticed that mask take up is diminishing. As of Monday, I got an email basically saying that we don't have to wear masks at school anymore. It got, you know, we were wearing masks around the corridors, like in most schools. Students were able to wear masks in and around the school, in class, anywhere they wanted. As of Monday, it's optional in my school. Not sure about, I'm assuming it's the same in all schools, to be quite honest, or at least in my borough. So that's of Monday, you know. So again, on Monday, it changes regarding mask wearing. You know, so that's going to be an interesting one. Again, to be honest, I'm not sure if that's the same on public transport. It might not be. It still might be compulsory on public transport. In fact, I'm going to go and check that one out now. Because I don't use public transport, I'm not bothered to check. But, that, you know, that's the email that I got. Simply because this government now is vaccinating people in their 30s, I think it is. I think the vaccination now is from 39 to 49. I think that's the age group now that is eligible for vaccinations in the UK.
Andrew, do you think there's going to be an issue, for example, if you choose to wear a mask, that there's going to be some sort of pushback from your employer? Do you have anticipated problems if you make a personal choice to continue to wear a mask because there's so much uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, my employer basically said this: if you want to wear one, you can. It's funny because at first, you know, the where we were, you know, we did an opening up. God, when was it? I think it was October, September, at some point late last year, and it was, we would prefer you as teachers not to wear a mask, you know, and it got to the point where, you know, they just let you do whatever you wanted to do. Because obviously, you know, you got people that are just basically really what you sorry. I think you got white people that are basically really worried. So if you've got a whole heap of white women saying they're scared, blah blah blah, then is a white head teacher going to fight with all these female white staff? I doubt it. So so I think a lot of it revolved around, you know, not being able to hold back the floodgates, as it were, with white. My personal belief is with white staff going bonkers, you know, saying they're scared for their lives, blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff, you know. So that's my personal view. No evidence of that. That's my personal view. But this time round, it's if you want to wear it, you can, because that's, you know, the other side of it is that's the only real way you're going to get all your staff back to work. You know, you got to let them wear a mask if they want to wear one. Otherwise, you're going to be paying a load of supply and cover teachers to come in and teach classes. You know, you're going to pay these people. You're going to pay, you know, agency staff to come in and teach if you're going to tell your teachers that they're not allowed to wear a mask. It's just, you know, I think, you know, do you know what I mean? So they've got to be a little bit pragmatic when it comes to stuff like that.
Much obliged. Our caller 0747. I guess other folks, if you have questions, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Now that is interesting. I believe Andrew, he said that his school announced on Monday that it was optional if you want to continue to do the whole mask thing. So that was what, 3-4 days before the CDC over here made the announcement that, hey, chuck it, you don't need it if you are fully vaccinated. So kind of moving in the same direction a little bit. But again, folks, at least here in the States, were kind of stunned when that happened. So we'll see how all of that unfolds over the summer as they, you know, talk about a resumption of travel and all the rest of it. Have you paid attention to the conflict, resumed conflict in Israel, the Palestinian Israeli conflict becoming a bit more violent? I know that has attracted a lot of attention worldwide, people talking about that and upset about different people's response to that. Has that garnered attention in the UK as well?
Yeah, loads. You know, that's been all over that conflict's been all over the news. Interesting, you know, because and also Biden's responses to it has been on the news as well. You know, this government basically supports Israel, you know, basically supports the Israeli government, by and large supports the Israeli government. You know, I've heard Biden say there's wrongs on both sides, trying to take a different stance to Trump. You know, as you know, Trump was fully supportive of the Israeli government. You know, the Israeli state is bombing the crap out of the Palestinians. You know, in terms of weaponry, there is no comparison between Israel and the Palestinians. And the way that Israel has forced the Palestinians to live for years, literally for, you know, and the, you know, the big thing about this for me, Gus, is that there is no education coming from the mainstream press anywhere, whether it's any American station or any European station, about the history of Israel. You know, the fact that Israel was created, right, by white Western powers, right? It was created. The country didn't exist. You know, it was carved out of other countries. You know, I mean, that's where it comes from. And the Palestinians were totally disenfranchised. right? So when we talk about any kind of conflict in that area, right, it's literally that is the history. You know, that's where the conflict comes from. It comes from stealing land, right, from the people that live there to give to your friends. You know, that's what that's the root of this, right? You're talking about a bunch of disenfranchised Palestinians, right? You know, so that's the root. That is the root cause of everything that's going on there, right? And we could talk, you know, and you know, I know a lot of this, who the Israeli people are, who Jewish people are, has been covered already by Neely Fuller, in terms of trying to get to the root of what color these people are, right? And we've got to understand as well that the Israeli people have racially discriminated against black Jews that have come out of East Africa. That's a fact, right? So, you know, so that's the backdrop of all of this. Do you get what I mean? So none of that is really spoken about at all. You know, so it's interesting, you know, I know what way Biden's got to go. He's got to go the same way undercover that Trump's went over ground. That's the way, that's where Biden has to go, you know, because what America wants is a foothold of power and control in that part of the world. And they have that through Israel, you know, that's the politics behind everything Biden's going to say with his mouth. You know, that's the line.
Context of white supremacy. He talked about in his response, Andrew was saying the importance of history and the void in terms of how the area of the world known as Israel was created, where individuals classified as white can take a chunk of property, sometimes a very massive chunk of property, pretty much the same ideology that we will, same ideology we'll talk about on Tuesday. Got confused with my days. Dr. Lathan is Wednesday. Sarah Jo Peterson and company is Tuesday. The eminent domain, whatever chunk of property we're talking about, how long you people have lived here, whatever you've been doing, get out of here. This is ours now. We'll call it what we want. Do with it what we want. You know, maybe we'll compensate you for it. Maybe we'll want. We'll see how we feel. And you know, that'll just be that. And then we can totally erase the whole history of how this happened and just pretend that we've been here forever. They're extraordinary at that sort of thing. And worldwide, that seems to be a key component of racism, white supremacy, to snatch pieces of property. As I said, sometimes very large chunks of property, continents. This is ours, always has been. Anybody who doesn't like it, well, maybe we'll beat you down, you know, if you say it enough and get on our nerves about it. That might be another reason. Reading more important than watching television. Lots of things. They have history books on how this chunk of property was created. Lots and lots of books. Books on prostate cancer as well and how we can preserve our health and vitality to solve this problem. Let's see. Person who dialed in 0242. Did you have a question? Andrew is with us from the UK.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, my name is Sert. I'm calling from London, UK, and I wanted to comment on the white people being able to go into the Middle East, also could be classified as North Africa, and claim land. It reminds me of when the white people in America throughout the California areas and other areas were classifying themselves as Native Americans, and they were called $5 Indians, and they were just going in there and taking land from the natives and killing them pretty much the same way that they're doing in the Middle East, but they're doing it now with like better weapons and better efficiency, and they have most of the globe screaming hashtag free Palestine when it means very much, it means nothing because it's illogical and nonsensical. It's just another, to me, it reminds me of Black Lives Matter. It's just a saying So my question is, as time moves forward, can we expect more violence in the Middle East or North Africa, however you want to call it, or is it going to kind of at least just get to a tipping point where they bring out the nukes and they bring out the real weapons, I guess? And that's my question.
Go ahead, Andrew. Well, folks generally call in. I tell them to call in for the global participants, so I'll respond to, but you can go first.
Okay, so you see, well, the answer is yes. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's about power and control. It's about power and control. It's about power and control and supremacy. And whoever has the biggest guns gets a chance to control basically as whatever they can grab. It's about the world's resources at this moment in, and if you like, spheres of influence, right? So obviously the middle, you know, what white people, the part of the globe that white people like to call the Middle East, which makes no sense, but anyway, that part of the world is oil rich, you know. And you think about Saudi Arabia, you know, Kuwait and all those countries around there, you know, that's oil rich. And also, you know, you spoke about North Africa. You have to talk about Africa. You have to talk about the DRC. That's the Congo. You're talking about all of the resources, right, that Africa holds as well. You know, the white people, the Europeans in America have got fierce competition now with China regarding the world's resources, which most of them are on the African continent, right? So that's right there. But also what Europeans and China have to contend with now is a growing African confidence, right? A growing black confidence in terms of economics, in terms of we're a young population on the African continent, which means we're dying less from things like COVID, thank God, unless now someone's going to create an African variant, right? You know, which remains to be seen. Somebody, anyway, it's another conversation. So, so in terms of all of those things, the world's resources, spheres of influence, all of those things, white people want control over. Right. So they will do anything to get it, which includes destabilization of various countries. It includes sending your people into your secret service to destabilize. It includes killing people. You know, a friend of mine is going to send me something saying with all of the names of 150 African political figures that have been killed on the African continent in the last 12 months. I didn't know that. So I'm waiting for that list to come, because it's that one is going to be news to me. But, you know, it's common practice for white people to go around just destabilizing countries for raw materials, and they can do it because they're powerful. So we have to, you know, stop that. But Israel, which is backed up by America and England and other Western white countries, and that is their foothold in that area, right? And Africa, they believe, is up for grabs. And they're fighting over that landmass, but what's good is that, you know, time is like a pendulum and it swings. Our job, in my opinion, I won't go on too long. Our job is to make that pendulum swing further and faster. You know, that's what I think our job is.
Context of white supremacy, Andrew. I guess my response to the caller's question, I think number one, he gave a contrast, I guess, with the hashtag Free Palestine and contrasting that to Black Lives Matter. I guess I'm suspicious of anything where they already have like hashtags ready to roll and made up. I'm a little weary. It just always gives me great cause, how the Israeli-Palestine conflict can become like a cause célèbre where lots of people will get excited as he's hashtag and free Palestine and that sort of thing. And that is a little different than replace white supremacy with justice and identifying what's happening there as white supremacy. I think Andrew even said before, not in his response just now, but a little earlier, he was talking about the so-called black Jews in Israel and how they are mistreated and we talked about it on the program, forced sterilizations and all of that. That is white supremacy or racism. Why not just identify it as that as opposed to all these other, you know, wacky terms that they will place on it? But either way, in terms of the conflict, I think the way that I described it earlier was it seems there is consistently conflict in this region. Conflict on the globe. The system of white supremacy necessitates ongoing conflict, ongoing violence, particularly white genetic annihilation requires ongoing violence. So it's just a question of how much violence it will be. I think the caller in his question asked about will they upgrade or escalate to some sort of nuclear conflict? That seems to be the type of thing where you might get in trouble with other white people if it escalates to that point. But in terms of the type of, I don't want to minimize it, but I mean, they would call it skirmish or these attacks that are happening right now. This seems like a pretty regular thing. I think Andrew used the term pendulum. This seems pretty regular, where it will escalate, they'll have attacks, it'll increase, and then it'll die down. And it goes much like the police violence here. They were making the contrast, much like the police shootings and what have you here. They will escalate for a time, and then it will calm back down, and it'll escalate again, and the protests and all, and then it'll calm back down. That is the system of white supremacy, ongoing violence to various degrees. Let's see. I miss. Trying to make sure I didn't miss other folks in our last few minutes. I just muted the caller to try to get rid of some of the background noise that I missed. The folks who dialed in, I just muted the line to try to get rid of some of the background noise when Andrew was speaking.
Thanks so much, Gus.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask a question here with Search. My name is Mary. I'm also here in London. I have a question related to this hashtag hype that's going around about Free Palestine. We've known for years and years of like how long Palestine has been under this like discrepancy. But I guess the protests and the immediate information via social media is allowing us to rally up about it now, but I also have heard now that Ethiopia are facing some big crises, and I'm thinking maybe this Free Palestine is also a form of distraction towards some of the bigger things that are going on in the African continent. And if that is the case, my question is, what could possibly be going further on in Ethiopia and for the cause of what's happening there right now, where women are being raped on a schedule within in schools? And this is done under the Ethiopian government, apparently. But I know, as formerly, well, Ethiopia was never colonized, but I believe that white supremacy has got their hands in there and a lot of control. So in that case, of course, there's some kind of orchestration towards what's going on there. But I just wanted to know what could be the deeper reason that the issues in Africa are being hidden versus the Free Palestine rallying up more than ever that even Jewish people are protesting. Yeah, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And did you want to respond?
Yeah, it's interesting because that's been on the news. Thanks, Mary. You know, that's been on the news here. What's going on in Ethiopia at the moment, and lots of different things. I mean, I'm not, I'm, I don't know the detail, but it seems to me that you got. I'd love somebody to come in and give the detail, but it seems to be two different factions fighting. One, I think, is the government fighting against another group. But stepping back from it, here's the thing that see and. Yeah, and Ethiopia was never conquered by white people, which I think is quite interesting. But here's the bigger picture, to some degree, as far as I'm concerned. There's now an economic block in East Africa. I don't know the name of it. I'm sure somebody here may know. It's an economic trading block that in East Africa. right? There's a developing peace amongst African countries in East Africa, right? A developing peace there, right? Now, what's interesting here is that you've got, it's not, I do not believe it's within white countries, nor America's interest to have peace on the African continent. And I don't believe it's within their interests for Africans to have trading blocks on the African continent either, because then you can, because it makes you stronger, you know. Similar to in the Caribbean, when Manley wanted to have a Caribbean trading block, and America basically dealt with him, destabilized Jamaica, smashed up the Caribbean. That's what, you know, that's what America did. They pumped weapons, right, into Jamaica. You know, that's what the Americans did. So that's a white Western tactic to destabilize and destroy. So at the moment, God, I'd love, I'll Google it, but you know, they've got a trading block East Africa. You've got a new trading block in West Africa as well, right? So that's the move. You know, that's where African countries want to go, trading blocks, all right? Because it makes Africa stronger. It makes African countries stronger, all right? When we deal with non-African entities, i.e. Europe, right? So I believe, my view is, anything that destabilizes the African continent, whether it's these things, whether it's focusing on the, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to see any fighting going on in Ethiopia, and I do not know the detail. I really don't. Mary, you may. I don't. But I'm going to guess that all of these things are going to be highlighted, right? I've not on European TV on here, I've not seen one word about the new trading blocks being that have already been established on the African continent. I've not seen one stitch, and I've been watching, right, and listening. But I hear this thing about Ethiopia. So everything that goes wrong on the African continent, we hear about it literally the very next second. In terms of the trading blocks and these things, I've not seen it on ITV at all. Why? Because it benefits us. And so this whole thing about media, European media and white Western media, ITV and all the rest of those things, BBC, you get bits, tidbits on the BBC, but as far as I'm concerned, most of it is about basically spreading negativity and bad press propaganda at the expense of anything that's positive coming out of that continent. You know, it's not to say you shouldn't talk about the bad, because you should. Do you get what I mean? You know?
Context of white supremacy. Much obliged for your question, Mary. I absolutely think, and I think it's been the case for years, that it is very appealing to divert to discussing things that are happening, this Israel-Palestine conflict, to divert to talking to that, and talking about that in a way that is removed from, this is just another illustration of white supremacy racism, to talk about that, as opposed to talking about things that are happening on the continent, happening to black people, really anywhere in the world. Absolutely. There was, I think we might have been our caller at 0747. I'm just trying to get him in as well before we conclude. Did you have a question that you wanted to get in as well?
Yes, just a quick question. There's a lot of discussion in the U.S. about critical race theory, and I guess there was a lot of discussion about the 1619 article in the New York Times. And in fact, there's legislation to prevent the quote-unquote teaching of critical race theory, teaching of racism in the schools. Is there any sort of similar type of move in the UK about teaching of racism or critical race theory? I guess the idea that critical race theory is really an extension of Marxism, and it's a socialist conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I don't really understand it that well, so I may not be articulating clearly, but is there any discussion in the UK about these topics?
Mary, would you like to go first? Mary, Is that Mary Gus that used to come on the show?
I think it might be a different Mary because she called in. I normally would have to ring in Mary. I thought that at first, but then I listened to the voice. Was like, no, that doesn't really sound like her.
Okay. excuse me. That is a very interesting question. and it's interesting because, you know, off the back of George Floyd last year, a lot of workplaces, a lot of my friends in various professions, and including where I am as well, a lot of different places. How can I? It's interesting. It's brought that discussion of racism into our workplaces at organizational level. So, and you know, I've spoken to enough people, not only in education, but in social work, in hospitals, I work in hospital teams, and all the rest of those things. And we've had school leaders, hospital leaders, I call it the George Floyd effect. Don't know how long it's going to last. You know, basically facilitating conversations on racism. And institutional racism within the organizations that we work in. And I've had conversations with a lot of black people and that work in this country. And my view is this: while it's going, take as much ground as possible. While it's happening, while white people quite rightly are happy to have a conversation and do something, not just have a conversation, you know, but do anything. All right. And, you know, if any ground can be taken, right, in the direction of justice, right, you know, then take it. I can totally understand how after years and years, well, us in the UK, 70 years of racism, I could totally understand how black people working in 2021 in the UK would be totally pessimistic. Totally, what's the word? Untrusting of white people at work suddenly wanting to talk about racism. Why would you trust them? There's no history. You know, all you've ever gotten there is a knife in the back, right? So why would you trust them? I mean, I'm in full agreement with that. But we're living in a very interesting, I'm going to say, just few months. When white industry leaders in the UK seem happy to talk about racism, you know, down to adverts, only for black people in adverts on TV, only for black people on TV programs. There seems to be a bit of a loving with black people at the moment, you know. And Gus, I have no idea how long that's going to last. You see, as I said last week in my workplace, we saw it in the late 60s, you know, a lot of hippies. You know, loving black people, and suddenly, as Nita Fuller said, they all went and got jobs for their dads at their law firm. And then again in the UK after the 81 riots or uprisings, you know, the government chucked a load of money towards black organisations. The Tory government under Maggie Thatcher immediately, you know, in the late 80s, pulled the money away. Black organisations disappeared. And so right now again, it's happening again, right? So the answer to your question is yes, right? There's this whole thing at work where we're talking about having these conversations around racism, how, you know, white attitudes towards racism, how they feel about their experiences and racism, how black people, and these are actual conversations that are having up and down the country. At work, right? You know, I don't know how long it's going to last. You know, I don't know how long it's going to last. So I wonder if I was going to ask if that's going on in the States as well. I didn't know if we were going to go down this direction, you know, but these are the conversations happening right now at work in this country, you know, and that includes kids as well, by the way. In schools, those conversations are being had with children as well. So I don't know how long it's going to last.
Not long, if history can inform us. And lovely, even Andrew, all the way across the pond, weaving in, hey, seen this before, the whole flower power and hippies and down with the establishment, been there, done that, got jobs, cell phones, attaché cases, had enough of that, yeah, rowdy for a little while, and back to the serious business of dominating the universe. Seeing this be, in fact, even a little bit of recent history, don't you all remember all of that Occupy Wall Street? Remember that? That was just 2011, right? All the white people, they were camped out in New York. That was in many, they had that in London, a number of different spots. Remember that? What happened to those white people? Did they just, they put all their energy into reelecting Obama and that was that? Like, you see this from time to time, especially the younger white people. They will go out and cut a fool for a little while and it just causes confusion with non-white people. Victims of racism. If anything, we talked about those conversations on neutralizing workplace racism, where it starts to come up in the workplace, where we got to talk about George Floyd. I would not have a whole lot to say. Like, man, those can just, that definitely is not going to last long. And that, in my opinion, dangerous for a lot of reasons. Really, they're just going to be studying you. It is not speech time. Your job is not to come in and pontificate on the meaning of George Floyd. Do your job. If white people want to discuss these issues, listen. Perhaps ask questions, but listen. Excellent. We talked about words a lot today. Woo. That is a very important time to be extremely precise with words and frequently not using a syllable. Once it's, what do you think about George Floyd? In fact, you can give him the one-liner, I don't discuss politics in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
No need to discuss any of that. And I've challenged folks for a long, long, let's see if we could do our across the pond challenge. So has anybody here, like, you got a raise, you got an extra hour of vacation time, you got a gift card for a free cup of coffee or a free pint. Anything constructive happened from you voluntarily sharing your views about racism in the workplace?
Nope.
Crickets. Crickets. That's what always happens. I've never had anybody say, oh, yeah, let me tell you about the one time that I brought up how much I admire Al Sharpton, and I got a bonus. I've never heard that. I've heard, even when it's people who work with other black people, that's the way I normally ask it, and I still don't. We had a black female. She called in, this was like in the last 10 days, she called in to talk about something totally irrelevant. And I asked, I said, hey, have you had an experience where just with black people on the job and y'all were just kicking it and talking about non-work related things? I didn't even say racism. I just said non-work related things. And she said the same thing Andrew just said. Nope. And in fact, she added, ooh, did have that one incident with a black person where I ended up having to call security. I said, do what? And she said, I had to call security. And I said, because y'all were talking about non-work related subject matter. Yes, security had to be called. That's the conclusion to the story. That's not funny at all. It's a terrible day on the plantation when you have to call security on another black person at work. Like, woof, prostate cancer, stress, all of that. That said, man, no time are we supposed to be chatting about racism, white supremacy, George Floyd, really non-work-related subject matter anywhere in the known universe in the workplace, even if you work with other black people. Not a good idea. And still, we don't have any examples of a black person coming here and saying, oh yeah, we were kicking it and talking about TV programs or Neely Fuller Jr. or being vaccinated. Nothing except constructive work-related things. That's the only examples that we have of people saying, oh yeah, awesome. We worked well together. We did constructive things and we talked about job related tasks, subjects. Neutralizing workplace racism every Friday. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That is like way early in the morning for folks in Andrew Land and other parts of the known universe, but it's in the archives. Anywho, we did our 90 minutes, extra five maybe. Much obliged to Andrew in the UK, some of our other folks who called in actually from across the pond. Much obliged. Maybe we can have you all participate for the duration next time around. You all can be on from the beginning and sharing some of these issues. It's been great to hear some of your thoughts on some of the other subject matters that we discussed. But we do this every month, the third Sunday of the month. I haven't looked. Let's see. For June, that will be the 20th, so we'll be right at the equinox. It'll be right at summertime. So June 20 we'll be here, and we'll do it again, white people permitting. Dr. Lathan, she'll be here on Wednesday. I will be sure to ask about prostate cancer and black male health. Very important. Again, much obliged to Andrew, our callers, Mary, caller, I believe in the Ohio area. Much obliged to everyone who participated. Hopefully it was worthy of your time and energy. We will do it again next month. Incidentally, if you follow any of the social media sites, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ The Problem Is White People. On Twitter, at Until Justice. There are links for the live program right there, all of those spots. You'll see actually posts for the segment today, so they're live live links right there. Any of the live programs, you can just check on social media and you should see our upcoming programs, and there should be a link where you can listen live, and or you can just, you know, call in and share your thoughts, and or you can just call in to listen as well if you want to hear the broadcast live time. That's it. Sobriety would be best anywhere in the known universe. We need our brain computer and vitality to solve this problem. In addition to being sober, when you are out and about, be alert. I would say especially in the U.S. because there's so many gun owners here. Be alert. There are so many wacky things happening in the world right now. You really can't be out and just kind of mindlessly going about your business. If you see someone being hostile, this is not a time to engage strangers. If particularly in the U.S., you should be thinking this person could be armed. In fact, they may have a whole militia of armed white people waiting in the wings that you can't even see. Be alert. If you didn't leave your residence, like, prepared to die and or kill, exit. You can, you know, call whoever you need to as you're exiting, but I mean, it is way dangerous on the plantation right now. All of that said, you're going out, you're sober, you're buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. We need to be mindful, as I just said, and we're trying to minimize contact with race soldiers, Derek Chauvin, Mark Furman, doing the small things that we can, sober, not on the cell phone, buckled up. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling in the 10 stops for a reason. We are trying to minimize, we were talking about that right there with Ethiopia, man, minimizing conflict with other non-white people. That is one of the most crucial components of white supremacy, racism, anywhere in the known universe. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.